The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Meyer.
I was just thinking about how Tom Holman is going to be going to the border today. And you want to talk about a border bulldog here. And then it just struck me. We have a local border builder. And that'd be Brent Holman over at the Holman Deck and Fence. I just saw their commercial, right? He's coming up here. And I was just thinking, hey, wait a minute. Maybe we have Tom Holman partner with Brent Holman, and then we'll get the wall built at some point in the near future. Hey, a fella can dream, can't he? Brent, you might have to use that on your next advertising campaign, all right? We'll have to do that. Anyway, 13 after 7, Mr. Outdoors joins me right now. Greg Roberts over at Rogue Weather. How you doing this morning, Greg? Welcome back. And it's a special holiday week edition of the Outdoor Report. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Yes, it is. And, you know, everybody probably, what's he doing on Tuesday? Well, at this time tomorrow, I will be up in the mountains. We're back chasing elk again. And, you know, we went out of Cascade rifle elk season. My buddy George, who may or may not be hearing this, has a muzzleloader tag. So we're guiding George, trying to get him on elk. But I'll tell you what, this muzzleloader season, it has not been very helpful.
How close do you have to get at him when you're talking about a muzzleloader? My father used to build muzzleloaders. In fact, I have one of his muzzleloader pistols. And if it's smoothbore, they're not particularly super accurate in my experience, but I imagine you're probably talking rifling on these.
Yeah, he definitely, I mean, it's a traditional flintlock, black powder. People look at it, think Daniel Boone, but yeah. He demonstrated Sunday to me that he definitely can be accurate with it out to about 100 yards. He's shooting, if I remember right, I think it's a 450 grain lead ball.
Boy.
Through that thing.
That's a big one.
That's after elk.
That's a big one. That's a big ball.
That is. Mm-hmm. But again, this is definitely a traditional weapon. Oregon is not really allowing the new current generation of quote unquote black powder rifle. When you look at those things and when you watch what they do, especially in the hands of somebody like a Jim Shockey, it's like, okay, now you're just getting ridiculous with this. I mean, seriously, you know, watching Jim Shockey on the range with it and then watching him go out and shooting moose with it at 200 yards, You know, I mean, it's like, are we really in the spirit of what was intended with black powder season?
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about that because, you know, knowing what I do know, and I don't know a lot about black powder, but I've shot them enough, though, to realize that it gives me great admiration for what the settlers in the United States ended up doing. I mean, it was a wonderful, wonderful invention for them, and they looked at it as a great, great advancement in technology of the day. But still, an amazing amount of work and skill it would take to bring down big game and feed your family back in those days.
Well, when it's all that you have and it's, quote, the leading edge technology of the day, And when you're literally hunting to survive daily, subsistence hunting, I guarantee you they were very, very good with those things in a way that I don't think anybody in today's world would be because, hey, starvation is a great motivator to be real accurate.
Well, you know, we even have a term for that here in Southern Oregon. There is a section on the map, Starvation Heights. Isn't that out by Gold Hill?
Yep, sure is. And, you know, I'd be really interested to know exactly how that got its name. I'll bet Dennis Powers might be able to track that down. That might make a fascinating thing for him on an upcoming Monday. But, you know, it's clearly a different world out there, but the essence of it doesn't change. And the reality is when you're doing muzzleloader season in Oregon, what you're actually doing is a variation of archery because we're employing a lot of the exact same tactics. We are doing calling. We just don't do it the same way we do it in the archery season. And one big missing thing is we're not bugling because there's no point in it. The bulls aren't talking. Heck, you know, in some places now, thanks to the wolves here in Oregon, the bulls don't even talk during the rut. But we're still fortunate we've got parts of southern Oregon that, you know, you can get out in the early morning and you can listen to the bulls bugling when the elk rut is on. But we do use cow calls. Elk are probably, in terms of making noise, they are probably one of, if not the most vocal animal we have. Certainly here locally and in North America, elk are extremely vocal.
And you're going to have to get very close to this, to any elk that you're able to take, right?
And so using the calls that cows will make, and I make a variety of cow calls out there. I'm doing everything from kind of more the barks to the squeals to the mews. They have kind of their version of a chirp they use. They use mews and chirps a lot, talking to their calves. And then calves, of course, they have mainly chirps, but when a calf has spotted something it's alarmed by, the calf does its version of the same bark that the cows do. I have actually never heard a big mature bull bark, do an alarm call. Big mature bull just typically throws his antlers back and just takes off like a freight train through the vegetation and terrain.
And then everyone follows,
yeah,
right?
Cows, yeah. They definitely, if they're picking up on something and they don't like it, They will alert on it, and I think most people are aware that deer will stamp their hooves and snort and do some other things when they're, you know, on guard and they're alerted to something. Cow elk will definitely, they do their bark, and they will on occasion do a stomp. So we try not to mimic, obviously, the alarm calls. We are definitely doing a call, and I have Primo's calls. I have what they call a hoochie mama, and
okay.
It's a
what's that?
Squeeze call.
Oh, it's squeeze a call. Okay.
Call.
All right.
And it will mimic the lost cow, the sound cow elk make when you scatter the herd out.
There would have to be some electronic calls available at this point, aren't there? I would imagine. Aren't there electronic calls available at this point in time?
Well, it's a pain in the butt in the field. Oh. I much prefer the hand call, the hoochie mama call, and I use mouth calls, the reed calls. I use both at times to simulate being a group of elk myself. And I'll tell you what, in archery season, when the bulls are on the rut, that's probably the single most effective thing that we do is you know, I got really good at it, and my family have used me for decades at it. I can make myself sound like a group of cows and calves milling around, and in the rut, the bulls come running in. They get focused on where I'm at and the noise I'm making, and they come running in to try to find the cows, and, you know, a lot of occasions they come right by whoever it is I'm calling for, and the bull never even saw the archer.
All right. Well, I wish you the best of luck on your hunt tomorrow. I think that'll be great. Hopefully we'll see that on Rogue Weather and you say, hey, no tag soup for Thanksgiving. Okay. Hey, how are Thanksgiving travels going to be out here on the West Coast? I know there's a big storm system going into California.
And now everybody's freaking out because now the national media is talking about how weather's going to impact Thanksgiving travel. Well, it will in the part of the country they care about, but out here, we are now going to be underneath a very big dominant ridge of high pressure. Mm-hmm. That will keep big storms out of here, but as we typically will see, especially this is the time of the year, here comes the valley fog scenario,
yep.
And due to where temps will get before the fog forms, we're likely to see freezing fog. So, Black Friday, about the time everybody who's really into it starts to jump out in their rig and fire off to go on the store binge in the morning, that's going to be about peak for the freezing fog side of things, and it will be dense fog. And a form of travel in and out of Medford that normally we don't have any issues with. Flying will actually now probably have the biggest issues in the morning because of the fog situation.
So look for heavy fog if you're flying in and out. Okay, good to know. I never travel like this on holidays. I just think it's just a big loser to do it. Just saying, my experience.
I'm trying to remember. I think, the last time I really traveled for Thanksgiving would probably have been 1995.
Mm-hmm. Well, when we would travel as kids with family, it was just 15 minutes to grandma's house. That was it. So 15 mm-hmm. minutes is all we ever were. It wasn't one of these things where we were, you know, long, long travel for that for the most part. So as far as, we know what's going to be like Black Friday then. Are we getting any closer to Ski Ashland being able to open a little earlier because of the changes? Have the snow levels come back down again? Is there any more coming down there?
I have not heard anything official.
Okay.
But reading between the tea leaves, looking at what they were doing last weekend, getting their staff trained up, looking at their snow situation, and now especially with Mount Shasta Ski Park announcing they're opening for the season and they're going immediately into daily operations. They are opening on December 11th. Well, Mount Ashland and Mount Shasta Ski Park always seem to have a race to see who can get open first. Well, Mount Shasta Ski Parks, you know, they've made it known they're opening on December 11th. So if Mount Ashland stays true to form, definitely looking for them to open before December 11th. You know, I have said I would not be a bit surprised if, especially today, we got this announcement from Mount Ashland going, guess what? We're going to open up on Black Friday. It wouldn't surprise me. I'm not saying they're going to, but do I think they're going to open before Mount Shasta Ski Park?
Yeah.
On the 11th?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You
because
do.
Because that's just the way it goes.
All right.
But they do have the snow for it.
Is there anything worth fishing at this time of year in these conditions?
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up because I would have forgotten it. It is the final free fishing days of the year for Oregon, and rather than doing the Saturday-Sunday thing, this time the combination is Friday, Black Friday, and Saturday. So everything is open in the sense that you don't need a license and you don't need tags. You need to observe all the rules of fishing, though, otherwise, like legal fishing times, legal fishing limits, legal bag limits. But you don't need licenses or tags. But, you know, I'm kind of happy that the storm thing worked out the way it did, because steelhead fishing, if we can get the rivers dropped out and clear enough, steelhead fishing ought to be pretty good, and especially with dropping water now off of the high water peak that we were seeing, that generally triggers some really good steelhead fishing in the river. So it's going to be entirely dependent on exactly where we are with the water, but my guess is especially the upper Rogue is going to be fishing really well on Friday and Saturday on the free fishing days for steelhead. And when I mean the upper Rogue, I mean above Shady Cove. We will see how the middle Rogue winds up shaping out, especially Grants Pass area, but that too may offer some fishable water, especially if you're fishing on the edges, because steelhead, far more than salmon, will tend to orient over on the edges when water's running a bit high. They're looking to get into water that's a little easier for them to negotiate, and that produces some great fishing out on the edges. So rather than trying to work the channels, you're literally working within 2 to 3 feet of the bank and working right on the edges, and had some great days steelhead fishing. Even though the river itself kind of looked a little high, you start working those edges and it turned out great. And I think the middle portion of the river, Grants Pass area, will probably allow for that edge fishing. But the upper river, Shady Cove on up to the hatchery, ought to fish extremely well Friday and Saturday.
All right. And another question about rivers. Do you have any contact with people keeping an eye on the Klamath? Because a number of weeks ago, I ended up getting that Grants Pass Water Lab lab results from what was going on down there. And I know that we've been getting all this happy talk about, oh, look at the magic fish are all coming back. And I'm sure they're coming back. But I was looking at the conditions back then, and just the water was so horrid. Now, it's been a lot of rain since that time. Has it cleaned up, or is it still washing a lot of clay down? Have you had anybody reporting to you on how that's looking over there?
That I have no idea on. Here's what I know on that Klamath situation. It has dissolved into a version of the climate change thing.
Oh.
The people who were against the dams coming out are putting out one set of information. The people that were for it are putting out another set. And the one that I really loved was the guy trying to claim that, you know, the Klamath is no different than the Rogue, and posted a picture of what the Rogue looked like down near Agnes when the rains had really hit it and blown it out, and it looked like chocolate milk water. And he's trying to claim that this is really what the Klamath is like. Well, no, it's really not what the Klamath is like because of the sediment and what built up behind those dams that were taken out. It isn't about water that looks like chocolate milk. It is entirely about what's in the water. And any of the salmon that did make it back into the Klamath and spawned, now the high water has come in and it's moving a lot of debris that was loose in the river. Mm-hmm. Long story short, anything they gained by whatever salmon could make it back to the Klamath and spawn after the dams came out likely just got blown up by Mother Nature.
That's kind of what I was wondering, and I have not been able to go take a look at it myself, but if you do find out from anybody, let me know, okay? Let us know next time, okay?
Yeah, I'll be keeping an eye on this, but like I said, you know...
You're right, though, that everyone's retreating to their corners.
River or climate change,
yeah.
You can spin data to say whatever you truly want it to say.
Yeah, all I know is that the water test that I ended up getting several weeks ago showed that there was nothing healthy for any kind of fish survival or spawning in that you know?
And it'll be interesting. It truly will be interesting to see if the natural cleansing effect of high water borderline flood coming down through there and scouring that river improved it, or if it further brought more of what was already coming out when flows were where they were. If you follow my meaning, it's hard to say whether it improved it or if it actually made the situation worse in two ways, wiped out the salmon beds that were there and put even more of that toxic stuff out there in the water. But believe me, somebody's going to do water sampling, and we'll know soon enough.
All right, very good. Greg, have a great hunt, and I hope you're successful about this. And if I don't talk to you before Thanksgiving, enjoy Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving. We'll see you next Friday for sure, okay? You be well.
Oh, yeah,
okay?
For sure. And again, you know, as always, one of the things I am most thankful for is all the people who listen to us. You know, it's funny, I'll be out in the woods and start talking to people, and people look at me kind of funny and go, "You're Mr. Outdoors. And yeah, it amazes me how many people are listening to what we do here. So I'm thankful for every one of them, and I'm thankful to you and to Brian Coppedge for even putting this all together and giving me the opportunity. Really appreciate it.
Very good. We'll talk to you next Friday. Be well, Greg. Greg Roberts at RogueWeather.com, Mr. Outdoors, for a special holiday week edition of the Outdoor Report. It's sponsored by Oregon Truck and Auto Authority on Airway Drive in Medford. 731.
As a business owner, you likely do a lot of driving around town, so turn your business vehicle into an attention-getting rolling billboard. The Wash Buggy Wrap Lab brands and restyles cars, pickups, vans, even big rigs with durable vinyl to present your business logo and info in a professional, contemporary design that's guaranteed to make a bold statement. The Wash Buggy Wrap Lab is your source for paint protection film, window tint, and vinyl wrap for your personal vehicle, too. Get your design suggestion today. Visit washbuggyautospa.com.
Disasters happen, and Oregon faces a range of disaster threats, including earthquakes, floods, and storms. You can prepare now by taking three important steps. Step 1. Contact your insurance company to make sure you have the right amounts and types of coverage. Step 2. Create a home inventory by taking photos or videos of your possessions in each room of your home. Step 3. Gather and make copies of important identifying and financial documents. Store them in the cloud or another secure location. These 3 actions can help you and your community be more resilient in the face of disaster. Be disaster ready by being insurance ready. Visit dfr.oregon.gov/prepare now to learn how. This message brought to you by the Oregon Division of Financial Regulation, the Oregon Association of Broadcasters, and this station.
The Best of Southern Oregon magazine, presented by Dusty's Transmissions, is online. To find out who won gold and silver medals in over 200 categories, visit the website and flip through the magazine online. You can also sort by category and learn about Southern Oregon's best, such as Dustin Curbs, Valley View Nursery, Tara Millen Law, Kennedy Fuel, and Harley Nielsen Construction. Congratulations to all the award winners from Bicoastal Media, publishers of the Best of Southern Oregon magazine. Visit bestofsouthernoregon.com today.
You're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
I appreciate you being here. We're going to break for the news, catch up with what else is going on. Herman Bereshiger joins me. We're going to talk about the economy, the way things are looking for 2025 and beyond. Also, next hour, DC Swamp Update, special holiday week edition with Rick Manning. And, of course, there's so much to talk about in the DC world, especially with Tom Homan going to the border today. I'm still thinking that Brent Homan at Homan built fence, deck and fence. You got to use that. You know, just maybe you can claim Tom Homan as a relative. I'll tell you, he is a bulldog. He's very good at deporting people. Not Brent necessarily. No, Brent's a good guy. So is Tom, good guy. But anyway, I'm loving this. Just thinking. The imagination stirs. Hey, we're also going to have a Diner 62 quiz today and tomorrow. And I have a special political prize to go along with the $20 gift certificate. Now, we're not doing it right now. Don't call right now. We'll do this next hour after we get done with the DC Swamp Update. But I have a couple of gifts that came from the Josephine County Republican Party last time we did a rally a few weeks ago prior to the election. And I was given both a roll of Joe Biden toilet paper and a roll of Kamala Harris toilet paper. And I really do think these need to go to listeners and not just sit on my back window ledge here for the Facebook Live. So the winner of today's Diner 62, you'll get your choice of either Joe Biden or Kamala Harris. And tomorrow, whoever wins tomorrow's Diner 62 quiz will end up getting the other one, whoever's left over. And what you do with the Biden or Harris toilet paper is up to you. Of course, it could be a really cool Christmas gift for someone who, well, has everything politically. Okay? Could be fun, all right? We'll have that coming up, 7:35 at KMED.
With Homan Built Deck and Fence, many customers in the Rogue Valley ask why we say fall and winter are great times for deck, fence, and siding projects. The answer? Faster scheduling, quicker completion, and better prices than next spring. Don't wait. Schedule your free consultation now. Homan Built provides top-notch design, quality craftsmanship, and exceptional service. You work hard year-round, and so do we. Visit homanbuilt.com to see our work. That's HomanBuilt.com. Homan Built. We build the best and fix the rest.
Health insurance doesn't have to break the bank. 80% of Oregonians received financial assistance through the Oregon Health Insurance Marketplace last year. And you might qualify too. At OregonHealthCare.gov, you can explore quality health plans from trusted insurers and find one that fits your budget and your needs. We're here to get you covered. Visit OregonHealthCare.gov to get started.
News brought to you by Millett Construction, specializing in foundation repair and replacement. Get on solid ground. Visit MilletteConstruction.com.
From the KMED News Center, here is what's going on. The final phase of comments are being taken for a controversial proposed gambling facility in Medford. The environmental impact statement is taking comments until December 23rd on what would be Oregon's first off-reservation tribal gaming center. The Coquille tribe wants to convert 2.5 acres of property in South Medford into a tribal gaming facility, and it's garnered resistance from tribes in Southern Oregon and Northern California, fearing the Medford gaming facility will divert people from their casinos on tribal lands. And Governor Tina Kotek opposes it. An Oregon State University study claims food insecurity has grown by 65,000 people since the beginning of the pandemic and has grown continuously. About 13% of state residents suffer from food insecurity. Expect a heavy police presence on Oregon's highways with saturation patrols for the Thanksgiving week, focusing on distracted and intoxicated drivers. Bill Lennon, KMED.
Take the Long Way Home was one of four hit singles off Supertramp's 1979 album Breakfast in America. If you find yourself losing your sanity and taking the long way home because of growing cracks in your ceilings and walls, give Millett Construction a call for a free estimate to fix the damage and correct your foundation problem. Stop thinking you never see what you want to see because your home used to be so nice. With Millett's help, it can be again. Visit MillettConstruction.com.
As a business owner, you likely do a lot of driving around town, so turn your business vehicle into an attention-getting rolling billboard. The Wash Buggy Wrap Lab brands and restyles cars, pickups, vans, even big rigs with durable vinyl to present your business logo and info in a professional, contemporary design that's guaranteed to make a bold statement. The Wash Buggy Wrap Lab is your source for paint protection film, window tint, and vinyl wrap for your personal vehicle, too. Get your design suggestion today. Visit WashBuggyAutoSpa.com.
While retinitis pigmentosa takes Mark's vision, his family gives him hope, whether at the family business or at home with his wife and sons. He knows he's not fighting alone. For 50 years, the Foundation Fighting Blindness has funded research into treatments and cures for blinding retinal diseases, providing hope to people with vision loss. And for Mark, winning the fight means being there for his family. The Foundation Fighting Blindness. Together, we're winning. Help us end blinding diseases at fightingblindness.org.
Hi, I'm Cassie from Clouser Drilling, and I'm on KMED.
May your drilling go swimmingly. Or wateringly. I don't know. It's 7:39. Josephine County Commissioner Herman Berchiger back on the case. Hello, Herman. Welcome.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. We've got a few weeks left in your term here, and then off to retirement? Or are you going to go off and go hunting for the rest of your life? I mean, what? What do you plan on doing?
What's the old Boston song? I'm going to do all the things that I never had time to do before.
Okay. Well, yeah. as long as you have a purpose, okay, don't just disappear. That's all we ask about, because you understand. The one thing I will say about you, Herman, is that I think you're very shrewd in analyzing the real life politics of what's going on here. And one of the ones I wanted to touch on this morning, Commissioner John West. I'm sure you got a copy of that that legal filing, couple of legal papers filed by Stephen Junkus. And boy, he's fighting to have the recall just thrown out. Says just not legal, right?
Yeah. Well, before we dig into that, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Because I just heard it on your advertisement, not your advertisement, your news feed. 16% of Oregonians suffer from food insecurity. Are you kidding me? We have food stamps. We have SNAPs. We have food banks. We have all kinds of religious organizations, and you're telling me 16% of Oregonians? Give me a break.
I think, though, and, you know, honestly, I would like to find out more about how they define that, because food insecurity is that, you're not always to get it. You're not always able to get it necessarily when you want it. And, of course, this could mean that you blew through your food stamps, too, early. Or you sold your food stamps for weed, or something else. Oh, man, I had to choose between weed and food. And you know what I'm getting at, that kind of thing. There's all sorts of hinky that goes on with it.
Yeah. Why? My beef is at some point we have to put some of the responsibility on the citizens, not just every time they find themselves in a bad spot, they just want government to bail them out.
To be fair, though, what we may be witnessing, though, also, Herman, and I'm trying to be fair about this, because between the rising inflationary costs of housing in Oregon, which is a real thing. You know that. You and I have talked about that. Yeah. All right. You have that. And you're getting to the point where many renters, I mean, I talk to people who are renting homes or renting apartments, and they're paying more for apartments than I'm paying to purchase a home because I refinanced at 3%, you know, 2-3 years back, you know, that kind of thing. So I'm sitting there kind of happy about what's going on, but I don't know what it's like out there in the rental world. And so I don't want to be too dismissive of that, of the real costs of housing in the state of Oregon. But that's essentially a state problem, too, because the state won't allow development because, well, climate-friendly, equitable community and people are evil. And, you know, you need to be in a stack-and-pack hive mind, right? I mean, you know, we have to look at that. Oh, and we're also going to protect 120,000 illegal aliens. We're going to make sure that they don't get out. And don't tell me that doesn't put pressure on social services. What do you say?
Well, I have visited communities across the globe that have inadequate food security, and it sure in hell doesn't look like what we're talking about here. So.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing how many fat people are insecure with their food. Okay,
all right. Back to West.
Now, so, John West here. Now, this is an interesting legal filing. He wants the whole thing thrown out. Apparently, he says it's illegal. It's an illegal election.
Yeah, I actually think he's got a pretty smart attorney who has a good record at beating the state of Oregon. I am not well versed enough in the statutes, so I looked at the one he's talking about, I think John's attorney knows what he's doing, and Herman does not. I just hope there's not some statute that we're missing that gives the Secretary of State the ability to write administrative rules.
Now, yeah, wiggle room. And essentially what they're saying, though, is that we had roughly 7,600 signatures submitted by Lily Morgan, you know, for this recall petition. All right. And the thing is, though, is that Rihanna Hankels, the county clerk in Joe County, only counted a little under 10% of them or verified them and then said, well, these ones looked okay, hence we think that there are enough, right? That's essentially where they're going here. And John West's attorney is saying that is not following the law.
That's correct. And I would be mad, too, because they didn't come up with a whole lot more signatures than they needed. And so, you know, they're gathering signatures all across multiple places, and I will be honest, Bill, I stopped at the post office, and I asked the people collecting signatures. They didn't recognize who I was. I said, so why are you recalling Commissioner West? And they just said all the bad things he has done. And I said, can you be more specific? I get that word out this morning. And they really couldn't, even though the petition is laying right in front of them. They couldn't tell me exactly why. He's just a bad guy.
Well, what's going on in Josephine County when it comes to John West, in my opinion, is the equivalent of Trump derangement syndrome. We'll have to call it WDS, West derangement syndrome. Okay? I think that's what's going on, honestly. I really do.
Well, yeah, and I will direct your attention to the Josephine County Democrat website and read with Ava Avery has put out. In my view, it's lunacy. She talks about, you know, women shouldn't have sex with their husbands. All the Democrat crazy talking points. She's on the website. She says it's not time to be nice. We must do this. We must do that.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. I went to their website. We're not going back. Resistance checklist. Do it loud. Do it quiet. We're not in other words, we're not going to we are not going back to non-crazy times. We want crazy times, and we're going to be leading it. We're the Josephine County Democrats. That should be their logo, I think.
Yeah. Anyways, back to John. If you look at the allegations, the questions on the I think they're stretching it a little bit there, like, going against the will of the people. What does that mean? Because you have a few hundred people that want you to do something and you don't do it? Is that going against the will of the people? Or going against the will of the people is a vote of the people, where the people vote to do something and then you go against it. So, you know, there's those kind of those questions, those allegations, I should say. I would say that Ms. Morgan is stretching it a bit.
Well, we'll have to see about this. I'll be interested to see what the Secretary of State. I'd really be interested to see what the Circuit Court has to say about this, because West is asking for a temporary restraining order to stop the election, the recall election.
John, I've said it many times. He is a fighter. He's not afraid to put his money where his mouth is. And, you know, if you think about the actions he has taken recently, what does he have to lose?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. Well, yeah. Some money. But and if he wins, he has a hell of a lot to gain, because he has proven that the Secretary of State don't know what they're talking about. And that's not the first time I've seen that. You know, the problem with administrative rules in the state of Oregon is there's no oversight by the legislature, Bill.
Mm-hmm. I know. And, well, the Democrats know that they have a Democrat in there, so do they care about oversight? No. They know that their political will shall be done with a Democratic Secretary of State. So there we go.
Yeah.
Now, I would imagine, had it been a Secretary of State Dennis Linthicum, then the legislature controlled by the Democrats would be happy to do oversight. Fair enough? I think they'd be happy to do that then.
They'll probably write a special bill just for oversight of Secretary of State's office.
Yeah, I know. Hey, I wanted to touch on something here that you know, what is going to happen to Pike Fork? Is there any comment? Has the board been having any conversations about what happens to that Pike Fork or Pike Creek, rather?
Pike Fork.
Pike Fork property that did not catch a bid. None of that land over that area in Williams caught a bid, right?
No. We sold most of the properties in Williams.
Oh, you did?
Yes, only one package didn't sell, and that was Pike Fork.
So nobody wanted Pike Fork. They didn't want to buy Pike Fork, right?
Well, I heard indirectly that there was phone calls made to the prospective purchasers not to buy it, and threats issued from the environmental community if they purchased it.
Oh yeah, we'll be spiking your trees and putting sugar in your gas tanks. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Mm. Now the flip side, the other side that was kind of struck me is the people that had raised all this money to buy Pike Fork and everything didn't place a bid.
Why didn't they place a bid if they were so concerned about this?
I don't know.
Well, maybe they only wanted to place a bid if they knew they could lock it up with, with the BLM, and you already have a, was it a caveat or some, a codicil in the deed that says that...
A deed restriction. Because they were a nonprofit. So we got to go back to the beginning. Josephine County can only sell land through an auction process. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
With the exception of a nonprofit or another government entity, then we can do direct dealing. Other than that, it has to go to an auction first, and after the auction, if it doesn't sell, then we can sell it what we call over the counter, but it has to go through an auction. Well, so the Pike Fork, they got a nonprofit. Here we go with the nonprofits, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
A nonprofit in there. And so we were dealing with the nonprofit. Now, you got to remember, at the very beginning of the conversation 4 years ago, the whole reason they wanted this property is so it wouldn't be logged and it'd be open to the public. Okay?
Okay.
That was their reasoning. So we said, no problem selling it to BLM. We're going to put a deed restriction that it has to, because you're a nonprofit, we're going to put a deed restriction that it has to be open to the public. We did not ask for a deed restriction about not being logged, because a fire could go through there and BLM's going to have to log it, okay?
Yeah.
So that wasn't it.
But still, the idea was that the public would have the access and enjoyment of using that property still. Okay.
Well, that's what they have today, and that's what they wanted. So then BLM said, well, we can't guarantee that we'll leave it open to the public. We may have to shut it down in the future, so we will not purchase it with that deed restriction. So that killed the deal. All right.
What happens to it now? Nobody has put a bid in to buy it, and so there it sits.
So if they buy it over the counter or at auction, that is different. There won't be any deed restrictions because we're not, it's, you know, it's, we're selling to whoever buys it, okay? So it's a little different now. So it's actually a better spot for them, I think. I was surprised they didn't put a bid in. But whatever.
Okay.
So anyway, so right now it's still on the market. And
how much? What do you think it's worth for regular people?
Well, it's a block. It's a little over $3 million.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pipe fork and some other properties. And I anticipate they'll say, well, we didn't want, because we didn't want the other properties. Well, all they had to do is go to one of the timber, whoever bought the other ones, and say, look, let's go in partners and buy this package. We want pipe fork. You take the other property.
Yeah, you can log the other properties. We'll keep pipe fork and leave it there. Okay,
yeah,
fine.
And get it bought. So, yeah. You know, the commissioners have been painted a bad person all along. But at the end of the day, our charter tells us that we have to go for the best and highest value because those properties and the money we make off them, not from selling them, but by producing a product off of them, that keeps our juvenile justice system going.
So that's where the money is used from such activity. Okay. All right. Fair enough. So speaking of that money in various activity, how do you think the county and even just the country in general is looking economically over the near future? I noticed that unemployment is still pretty flat here in Southern Oregon. Still feels a little malaise-y, though, in spots. Do you agree or not?
Yeah. You know, I was just county commissioner from Douglas County, just did a video, and if I remember, I'll forward it to you, explaining the woes of Douglas County. So Douglas County is 2 years behind Josephine County. In 2 years, it'll look just like Josephine County. They have a reserve right now, but they're gobbling it up pretty fast.
Yeah.
So he lays it out pretty good. He's got one hell of a job because the debt, as we talked about yesterday, is the 36 trillion pound gorilla in the room, okay? And so he's got to keep the economy going. So I think they'll continue to borrow money.
And he has to keep the interest rates on the debt from swallowing up the ability to do anything. And you have the states like Oregon that are just ready to sit there and continue to suckle at the teat of grant stream funding from the federal government. Isn't Oregon dependent for about a third of its revenue from the federal government right now, last time I checked?
Bill, yes, and at 38%.
38%. Okay, it's close to more than a third.
Yeah, and look, the reality is Americans have got to quit depending on the federal government. They say it's taxpayer dollars. Well, it's, you know, I was just looking at the farm bill. Look at the 50, $60 billion for that. Who's going to pay? We're just, as my grandfather would say, we're living too high off the hog, okay? And we've got to come to the reality that we can't depend on government for everything.
I would dare say, though, that what we're going to have to experience over the next 2 to 3 years, especially, is you talked about people living high on the hog via the tax money or the created credit, whatever you want to call it. There's going to be some piggies that needlessly, or I should say, there are going to be some piggies that need to squeal, right? Fairly, to be fair about this. It's the only way they're going to be able to make it work, make it pencil. You know, this idea that you're going to borrow $1 trillion every 90 days and shove it into
it can't happen.
Can't do it.
You know, so Trump's got to figure out how to keep this ship afloat, because in 2 years he wants to hold the House and the Senate again. Okay.
Well, Rick Manning's thinking that if you're really doing it right, you should be willing to give up the House to do the big things that need done. That's what Manning was saying. I'm going to talk with him again in a few minutes.
I think you'll see a disagreement from the House members.
Well, of course they are. But you see, when the Democrats do big things, and he's right about it, every time the Democrats, see, the Democrats are smart about it. I don't want to see the Republicans be stupid. Well, they're going to hang on to my job. The Democrats will sit there and sacrifice their House leadership or the majority to be able to get the biggest, most controversial stuff going through that lasts for the long term. And Republicans have been too guilty for too many decades here, Herman, of playing small ball. Fair enough? What do you say?
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that. I don't know, though, if you'll get House members to go along with it. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm saying. And having such a tight majority in the House, that's going to be difficult. Trump's biggest, in my opinion, and we'll put it down for this date, see if I'm right, his biggest challenge is not let unemployment get away.
Yeah.
Okay, because when all these ARPA funds are gone, all this money, trillions and trillions of dollars being injected in the economy is going to slow down. And when it slows down, so how that works? So the owner of Acme that produces widgets, well, now people don't buy as many widgets because the money in the economy is slowing down. So then he has to lay off some people because he's not selling as many widgets. Then the people he lays off quit buying more things, not as many things, because they're now laid off. And so then the whoever they're buying from don't sell as many of their products. See what I mean, Bill? It's a spiral, and that's what Trump has got to be really keeping his finger on.
And yet, I have to tell you, the talk that he's coming out with yesterday, that we're going to put a 25% tariff on everything from Mexico and Canada, that would be a restrictor, too, of sorts. Now, he's doing it because of fentanyl. You say he wants Canada and Mexico to crack down on the fentanyl thing. But still, that would be a restriction on the economy, too, would it not be?
Well, you know, he talked about in the 1800s, in the turn of the last century, we didn't have income taxes and stuff, and mm-hmm. that tariffs paid for everything.
Yeah, we also had a federal government about 1/20th the size it is now, right?
Oh, gosh, it is so blown out of proportion, how many people work for the government. It's insane. And we're all feeling it. So, you know, the county is just a small part of what's going on, and I see it. We're going to downsize. There's no way we can keep our 400 and some employees with the money we have. It's impossible. So at some point, they're going to have to downsize.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting time on the counties, for the state too. And when you look at the upcoming session next year, what are the odds that they're going to find a way to raise taxes and raise taxes bigly?
You know, they're pretty arrogant about their holding the majority of the voting bloc in Oregon. So I don't think that'll scare them off. I think there's a good chance that they're going to come up with some scheme to raise taxes.
I admire what Dwayne Junker did the other day. Did you see that when he wrote a letter to the EPA?
I talked to Dwayne.
I really. And by the way, if you didn't hear that segment yesterday, folks, Dwayne Junker actually wrote the EPA, said don't send the $200 million to the state of Oregon, you know, for the climate, for the climate money. He says don't do that. And, with a Trump administration coming in here, certainly friendlier to the Dwayne Junkers of the world. He may get his wish. You never know. But I like the way he's fighting.
Trump's got to keep the economy growing. Mm-hmm. He's got to keep the unemployment rate down.
But he has to stop sending money into the green grift because that's non-productive. That's non-productive economy, really.
Yeah. Well, what I'm worried about, Bill, is that we do slow the spending down, which means we slow the borrowing down, which is a good thing. But there's, you know, like a doctor once told me when he gave me a prescription, there's always a little poison in the cure.
Uh-huh.
And that's what the poison in the cure is. is the repercussions of doing that. And I'm a little worried about that. So
there would have to be some pain to come with it.
There's going to and people in this country, people's expectations of what government should do for them.
Very high.
Very high.
Yeah. Herman, I appreciate the take as always. You be well. Happy Thanksgiving. And we'll circle around next week, and hopefully you enjoy your time. Are you going to cook something at home, or are you?
Oh yeah, they drew my name out of the hat for Thanksgiving here, so I'm the turkey plucker this year.
All right, well, you better start peeling the potatoes. Okay, we'll see you later. Okay, be well.
Take care, Bill.
Herman Berchiger, Josephine County Commissioner. It's a couple minutes after 8. Rick Manning joins me. We'll continue this conversation to where it's headed with the D.C. Swamp Update. Rick Manning from Americans for Limited Government. That'll be after news.
Are you buying?